Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. Live inside the Kia Studios right now on a Labor Day. Thomas Mott, Will Pelagic hanging out with you guys, filling in for John and Hugh. Just wrapped up an NFL quick hit segment, and people are reacting to it on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, Will, 404-741-0929. Someone says, Raiders win 8 games, buy or sell. I would buy that. And someone else said, Carson Wentz is only going to play 3 games. Who wrote that tweet? Are you kidding me? 3 games? If Carson Wentz plays all 16, watch out. Let me just say that.
Someone also wants you to put some respect on Matt Ryan's name. He threw for nearly 5,000 yards on the back half of the year. Give the man a little more respect. Russell Wilson and Wentz are sexy names, but less substance.
I said that Matt Ryan will be the 6th or 7th best quarterback in the league. Is that not good enough?
Also, someone is not a fan of your Kirk Cousins take either. He's not throwing 3 touchdowns.
Well, we will have to see and wait and see on Saturday, or on Sunday. That is a stacked offense in Minnesota. Dalvin Cook healthy, Thielen, Diggs, Rudolph. It's scary. And Cousins, listen, he's thrown 25-plus touchdowns the past 3 seasons. I'm just saying it could happen against the Falcons on Saturday, on Sunday, yet they still might win.
20 minutes from now, we'll talk some Atlanta United with Jason Longshore, our Atlanta United analyst. Of course, your home for Atlanta United soccer is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. A little bit of a break now for the Five Stripes after their 3-1 loss at Philadelphia. They have about a 2-week off period here as they at least try to recuperate after having to play 8 matches in the entire month of August, going 7-1 in all comps during that time.
At 929 The Game to follow the station on Twitter, at Real Thomas Mott to give me a follow, at Willie P. Style to give Will a follow as well. Here's what we're going to do now. On my normal show, Ready or Mott, I do a segment called Audio Overload. We have taken that and brought it along with us for the morning show here. Here are the 5 or 6 best sounds over the weekend, and producer Bo is going to give them to us one by one. Let's start with the first one.
The MVP is he's just he's amazing. I mean, what he does and the timing and when we need it, and you know, he got whacked on the foot yesterday and he limped around the bases on the first homer, and but wasn't going to be denied. He's going to play, and because of that right there.
That was Braves manager Brian Snicker last night after Freddie Freeman had 2 home runs and added some more RBIs as well. And what was an excellent night for the Braves as they got a win over the White Sox 5-3. The question, though, there, Will, is Freddie Freeman the NL MVP in your eyes right now?
Bellinger still, I think, will get a lot of the credence because of the record for Los Angeles, but it's hard to not like what Freddie has done for this team. He is a stabilizing force. He at least lets that off. He gives that offense the kind of balance that it has, because it has table setters up above him and other guys behind him too to be able to make that happen. And somebody who, you know, it's odd. You never really notice him ever being in a slump because other guys around him have picked him up. And because of that, I think that is part of the reason why he's getting a lot of the MVP love, not only here locally but nationally. I still think more of the love will come to Bellinger. You and I both know this very well. We in Atlanta don't always get the kind of national respect that we deserve. Because of that, I think that he might fall short, but he's certainly deserving.
Right now, he has the 3rd best odds. That is Freddie Freeman right now in Vegas to win the NL MVP, of course, behind Christian Yelich and Cody Bellinger. I will say this before we move on to the next bit of audio. Remember whenever we got 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers weeks back? That final game, game 3 of the series, Freddie Freeman went 0-for-4, and they still won. Not a knock on Freddie Freeman at all. It's
but
a plus for the team, right? Exactly what you just said. Big win against the Dodgers, and it shows that, hey, they're here, they're competing, and I'd be all for a Dodgers-Braves Bellinger versus Freeman NLCS. I'm all, ooh, boy.
Christmas. People also knocking his defense, though. Again, I don't necessarily believe that. I don't believe that that necessarily is the case. There have been some hot takers, including some at our good friend David O'Brien, who were mad about Freddie's defense, which again I think is a bit of a. Bit of a short-sighted
situation. Didn't he win a gold glove? I'm pretty sure he did.
He has. But a lot of people think that the gold gloves go to the guys with the best sticks, and they just kind of give the gold glove away as kind of a throwaway. Some of those gold gloves do happen that way. I'm not saying it necessarily happened in the case of Freddie Freeman, but there are some hot takers out there, not necessarily hot take Tommy, but there's some hot takers out there who put that. I had to at least put
you
one
to.
In.
You had to. It's fine.
I've been told that I will never host on this radio station ever again if I don't at least call you Hot Take Tommy once during the course of a show.
I talk about Tiger Woods will never win another major the night before he wins the Masters, and it's going to haunt me for the rest of my career, even though Woods has looked terrible since the Masters. But let's just move on. Next bit of audio.
Next pitch will be number 120 for Verlander. Here it comes. Ground ball left side, waiting on a Toro. He's got it, throws across in time, and that is the ball game. A no-hitter, Justin Verlander, the third of his career. The Astros mob him in front of the mound as the Astros win it 2-0.
Justin Verlander's no-hitter, the call courtesy of Robert Ford on KBME Radio in Houston. Third no-hitter for Justin Verlander. It's funny, Kevin Biggio, the only base runner, of course the son of Craig Biggio, ironically enough, part of that. But a fantastic day for Verlander. He struck out 14 and also has two more no-hitters than any Blue Jays pitcher's ever thrown. Only Nolan Ryan, with three, has thrown more road no-hitters than Verlander's two. And the interesting thing about Verlander is both of those no-hitters came in the same ballpark, both coming against the Toronto Blue Jays. His other Blue Jays no-hitter, at least no-hitter against the Blue Jays, came in his time with the Detroit Tigers. But second no-hitter thrown by the Astros this year. They threw a combined no-hitter earlier in the month of August. It's very, very encouraging to see for a Houston team that has built itself on pitching. They're all in on pitching, and Verlander is the gem in that rotation.
Justin Verlander, again, his third no-hitter in his career. That ties one Cy Young and keeps him one back of Sandy Koufax and four back right now of the great Nolan Ryan. Again, it's so rare to see, and ESPN always seems to jinx it. If you get that little notification on your phone that says no-hitter alert through eight, it's almost a guarantee that it's going to get broken up. But when you have Justin Verlander, who's married to Kate Upton, it's a pretty good life overall. He gets his third last night.
The traditional pitching triple crown numbers all basically have him in front. Big league lead in wins with 17. AL lead in ERA, and also has 257 strikeouts, the most in the American League. Audio overload number three.
We became really creative with how we could do it, and allowed us, in the very end, with Julio Jones still to be done, to go after a guy like Matt Bryant, a guy who is a veteran here, who's not going to be a veteran minimum salary. He's going to cost us money, and we thought, obviously, it was worth it.
Did you see what the Falcons released on Twitter, like maybe four days ago, whenever they signed Matt Bryant? Is that from the Twitter? It might not be, but they released this three-minute video on the Falcons' official Twitter of Thomas Dimitroff basically explaining why they went out and got Matt Ryan. And during that, he basically goes, well, we wanted to see what the young guys could do, but we always knew we'd bring back Matt Bryant. Baloney. Here's what happened. You wanted to go cheaper, you wanted to go younger, which is totally understandable, and it bit you in the behind. You did not have a second kicker to compete with Giorgio Tavecchio, so you had to go crawling back to Matt Bryant. You had to pay him more money than what you would have paid him this past year, and here we are with a 44-year-old kicker. The good news is, though, like I said like an hour ago, if he stinks this year, we can say nothing about it because we wanted it.
You know me, I'm a big chick flick fan. You ever see the movie Hall Pass?
I have seen like 5 minutes of it.
That literally is like what this whole kicking situation seems like from the Falcons' perspective. They got a Hall Pass. They tried to go out and find what was young and sexy with Giorgio Tavecchio. Blair Walsh, I wouldn't call necessarily young and or sexy, but they tried to at least go out and see what was out there, and they saw what was out there. You know what they saw? They didn't like it. So they ended up back with their wife. They ended up back with Matt Bryant. And again, having probably to play a little bit more than they wanted to. So Matt Ryan gets a couple months off, gets a nice big raise. And because of that, the Falcons at least feel like they've stabilized the kicking position. Although, again, you wonder because kicking is so volatile in the National Football League.
He's hit 57-yard field goals in the past, I think, 2 or 3 years. And, again, he's one of the best kickers in the league. And like you said, if you're Matt Bryant, well, you played your cards correctly. You got to go hang out with the family. Got to go relax on vacation, and then at the last minute, get a little bit more money, and then you come be a kicker, which, if you're a good kicker, is one of the easiest jobs in all of professional sports, money-wise. If you're a bad one, it's one of the worst.
Next audio overload, number 4.
Second, I just want you to understand, to win that first bowl game in school history is something, it's very, very special. We hoisted a trophy. We played in the postseason. In my 23 years of coaching, that will probably be one of the number one. It may be the top of the list in victories for myself and my career. But as far as a football program, this is probably a close second to that one.
That is Georgia State head coach Sean Elliott following his team's 38-30 triumph on Rocky Top in Tennessee. A big game for him and a big game for a program that's only 10 years old. It was 2-10 a year ago, and they go and beat Mighty Tennessee. Again, I know that the bowl game victory was big for them, and I know that that's something that they take a lot of pride in, especially having moved to the Sun Belt and knowing exactly what that means to a program. You get a trophy, like you said. But it's hard for me, Thomas, to not look at that and say, that can't be the biggest victory in school history. And again, maybe that's more of an indication of how far Tennessee has fallen and an indication of just how systemic that beatdown was. I mean, you know, like I told you earlier, and I talked to guys who called the game, Georgia State looked every bit as physical as Tennessee in the trenches, looked every bit as dominant with its skill position players, and had a stabilizing force at quarterback in Ellington. I think that particular situation is probably the most galling thing about what we saw on Saturday in Knoxville.
Shout out to Caleb Johnson, our one of our update anchors here at 92.9. It does a lot of stuff on my show. He was the one who asked Sean Elliott that question there. And it's like you said, this was not the case of the football bounced the right way, or there was a tough pass interference call and Georgia State went out and, you know, lucked their way into a win. They played better, and they looked better on the field, and they dominated trenches.
It was no fluke.
Which should never happen when you play Sun Belt versus SEC, and yet that's why we talked about it in the first hour, the mystique of the SEC dying. But it was unbelievable to watch, and just good overall for Georgia State. It's very rare you have a Saturday where Georgia State has the biggest win in a state that has Georgia and Georgia Tech and, of course, the Falcons as well.
And Georgia Southern.
And Georgia Southern, who got murdered by LSU. But that's neither here nor there. All right, next audio.
Players don't talk to the opposing team. I tell our players, you know, if you want to talk to the other team, join a debate team. I mean, excuse my language, but I just really get hot about what I see in sports. That's not what we're trying to accomplish in what we do.
Is Nick Saban literally the funniest guy in press conferences when he's trying not to be?
Nick Saban is now turned into a dad joke commenter, is what he sounds like.
Let me ask you this. If you had to be chewed out by any head coach on a sideline for a football game, is Nick Saban the last coach you would pick? When he chews someone out, good Lord, it looks scary.
Have you seen Dabo get on punters, man?
I've seen Dabo, yes. When they tried to run that fake punt like a couple seasons back and he didn't get it, and he went, what are you doing?
That's one guy who I wouldn't want to get chewed out by because, again, you know, I feel like Dabo is very much kind of a CEO. I think Saban is a guy who I think I could respect more getting chewed out by because, again, you know where it's coming from. You know where the chew out is coming from. I'm wondering how does Brian Kelly get the chance to chew anybody out like that? That's one where I'm looking at him. I'm just like, really, Brian Kelly? Really, you are going to chew me out?
I just can't imagine messing up on the field and then having that slow trot back to the sideline as Nick Saban stands there with his arm crossed in his Alabama polo, and you know what's coming, and you might try and kind of, you know, skirt around him like, oh, hang on, let me go talk to my no, come here, and then they just pan to him and he just lays into them. He was mad at a referee, I think, during Bama's win over Duke at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and he just ripped into them as well.
The other part of it too is not only him, but even it might happen. It might not happen on the field, but guess where it is going to happen with you and Saban? It's going to happen with you in the film room the next
probably
day.
Even worse.
Probably comes to be even worse. He probably just has to just look at you with that scowl, be like, you know what you did wrong. It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. Willie P and Thomas Mott here with you. Coming up, we will talk soccer, five stripes with our good friend Jason Longshore. Atlanta United soccer analyst. Despite the fact that the month of August ended on a sour note, we will ask Jason to spin this forward and ask him what this break means for United as they try to figure out things down the stretch of the MLS season. Willie P. and Thomas Mott in for John and Hugh in the morning show. It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. Back inside the Kia Studios, Willie P., Thomas Mott in for John and Hugh on the morning show. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Happy Labor Day to you. Hope you're not having to labor too much if you do have to work on this Labor Day. Let's head to the WaitFor.com hotline. We are joined by Atlanta United soccer analyst Jason Longshore following Atlanta United's 3-1 loss at the hands of Philadelphia. Though, Jason, as you know, taking the long view of the past month, you have to be encouraged by going 7-1 in all comps. While the month did have a sour end to it because of the fact that you lose to the team that now takes over the lead in the Eastern Conference table, a very good and fruitful August for this United squad.
Huge month. Huge, you know, when you look back at two trophies and you look at the level of performance that the team hit, they weren't able to do that on Friday in Philadelphia. Honestly, I think it's been tough for the team to hit that level of performance since the win in Portland. And that was a long trip. You came back, you grinded out a couple of results. One got you another trophy in the U.S. Open Cup. But you saw it in Philadelphia. It was a game where Atlanta had moments. Atlanta could have gotten out of there with 3 points, but they just didn't have enough. And Philadelphia, who's played 5 fewer matches since the beginning of July, was fresher. And they knew it, and it showed down the stretch, final 30 minutes.
Jason, I remember you talking about this on the post-game show after the loss to Philadelphia, but I want to reiterate it for the fans listening right now. How good is Philadelphia this season, and how big of a deal is it that Atlanta did end up, you know, having a shot to beat them towards the end of this match?
I think Philadelphia is a contender to win MLS Cup. And I don't know if they're being talked about nationally in that type of level, but a win like this shows it for me. When you look at the Union without Alejandro Bedoya, their captain, and they're able to get this kind of performance from players that just aren't that well known, like Harris Madunyanen, thought he was outstanding, had an assist on the night. Kasper Schabilko is one of the league leaders in goals from open play. He is among the top 5 in Major League Soccer in goals per 90 minutes from open play, and he showed his quality with his outstanding finish. And Jack Elliott, who was a 4th-round draft pick in 2017, made a couple of key tackles, and he's a guy who is keeping out U.S. Youth Internationals from this lineup. So this is a team that doesn't have a lot of stars, but Jim Curtin, their manager, has them playing a style that suits them and is very difficult to beat.
Atlanta United soccer analyst Jason Longshore joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Again, your home for Atlanta United soccer. One of the things, Jason, and again, it's hard to harp on it too much because, again, I know that this is part of the reason that this happened was because of the legs not necessarily being there for United, but did you notice kind of some reversion to some bad habits where it was a lot of kind of standing around watching and maybe kind of waiting for Joseph to do something? I mean, that individual goal that he had was an amazing effort and one that, of course, made SportsCenter and all the highlight shows. But I think there was at least an increasing desire by, it seemed like, a lot of the Atlanta United players to kind of wait for Joseph to do something.
Yeah, you were really missing Ezequiel Barco, getting one more player in that front three to be able to combine. I thought Emerson Hyndman wasn't quite on the same wavelength with Pitty Martinez and Joseph Martinez, which is understandable. He hasn't played as many minutes with that duo. Pitty and Joseph were both looking for opportunities. They just needed a little more support. And from the wide positions, another spot that we've seen contributions, Julian Gressel and Dion Pereira and Justin Merrim all kind of struggled to get forward enough to help. Part of that's legs. Part of that is Philadelphia really doing a good job of limiting the opportunities for them to be able to get forward.
Jason Longshore joining us right now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Where do we go from here? Because obviously losing just the other day to Philadelphia means they're currently sitting 3rd in the Eastern Conference, but they still have a game coming up against New York FC, who is obviously 2nd. Where do you see the rest of these games going? If you had to predict the seed for Atlanta United come postseason, where are we going?
I think it's one or two, just because when you dig into what each of the teams have left, Philadelphia has the toughest road left. They've got LAFC coming to town here in a couple of weeks, and their players are up for this, but LAFC has been dominant outside of last night's loss at home to Minnesota United, which caught a lot of people by surprise. Carlos Vela dealing with a hamstring injury. We'll see if he's back for that big showdown with the Union. But NYC has a tough schedule coming in as well, and both of them are going to drop some points. Atlanta has the trip to Yankee Stadium, which is always difficult. They have what could be a tricky match in Montreal again at Stade Saputo against the Impact, against a team that it could be battling for a playoff spot at that time. And don't discount Decision Day either with the New England Revolution coming to town, who have turned everything around since Bruce Arena took over. They'll be fighting for playoff positioning at that point. All that said, I think it's a little more manageable for Atlanta. I think it's one or two in the East, and NYC is the one that I probably worry about the most winning the conference.
You mentioned the injury to Barco earlier, Jason. How much does this group need this two-week break? Because it just seems like, and you mentioned it also earlier, it just seems like they've been asked to play a load that many would say is almost too tough to tame.
It just piles up, and you need this break in a big way. Barco's not going to the Argentine U23 camp now with the slight injury. Hopefully we'll be back in a couple of weeks and won't miss any more time. You just haven't had that sharpness. I look back at the week that saw Atlanta beat NYC, beat Club America in the Campeones Cup, and go to Portland and win that one as potentially the highest standard of play that Atlanta United's ever hit. But that also takes a lot out of you, because it's not even just the amount of games that Atlanta's played, it's the intensity of the games. The Club America game felt like a championship final. The Minnesota United Open Cup final was a cup final. You also had a semifinal in Orlando that wasn't exactly easy to deal with either. So that intensity, the amount of minutes you've played, it adds up. These guys have to get away for a few days, take a break, and now they can start to look at some of the things like you guys have mentioned about not standing around, looking to combine, making sure that even when the legs aren't there, even when the opponent is putting you under pressure, the positioning is proper, the discipline is proper to get through those tough moments.
You know, a guy who, Jason, in my mind, continues to show out, and it's odd because he's a guy who's turned down U.S. men's national team call-ups here recently and, of course, in the past, is Darlington Nagbe. And I think his play, I think, showed out the most over that 8-game stretch in August. You know, his combination power with Joseph and some of the real stabilizing play he's had in the midfield. I almost wonder if it's a good thing for United that he's around, but I almost feel like not enough people nationally are talking about his ability to not only combine with Joseph, but just to stabilize that midfield.
Yeah, totally agree. He's the wild card in the midfield, and we saw it on the goal in Philadelphia, where he's the one who kind of sees, okay, I have some space here. It's late in the half. I know we're trying to just get to the locker room, but I'm going to take this and see what I can create out of it. And he combines with Joseph. Pitti plays it back to Joseph. You get the 1-2 with Nagbe at the top of the 18. So many times this season, it's been those moments when Darlington Nagbe puts his foot on the accelerator and pushes this team forward that they get goals. I think when it comes to the national team, and Darlington has stayed, you know, quiet on the situation, it's all speculation around the issues with why he doesn't want to go play for the national team. If he's not going to play as a starter and play key minutes for the U.S. national team, I think at his stage in his career, he doesn't want to go take that time away from the club, the travel, the grind, and not be a focal point. He should be a focal point. He is one of the best midfielders, one of the most technical players the United States has ever had.
We talked about this a little bit earlier on the show, but United, obviously the 7-game winning streak was the high of the season, really, right now. Could we spin the Philadelphia loss, and I think you've talked about this on the post-game show as well, as being a blessing in disguise for Atlanta United, kind of reset their focus and go, all right, we were on this high. We had won 7 in a row. We had, you know, won all these different matches in the tournaments and in the cups and everything that they did the past couple of weeks. Could this center them and go, wait a second, we might not yet be the best team in the Eastern Conference. Let's refocus and play harder to finish out the season.
That's a great way to look at it, because, you know, you do listen to the noise a little bit. And even though Atlanta really hasn't gotten a whole lot of credit for their performances as of late, I think when you're playing that well and you're winning those games and you're lifting those trophies, yeah, it can be a little bit of a distraction. You can start to believe the hype a bit. This Philadelphia game shows you that, you know, you're not able to just step on the field and not, you know, be tested. The Union can test you. NYC can test you. When you look at the top teams out west, if you get to a cup final, any of them can test you. Atlanta United, as good as they are, still have to bring it week in and week out against top teams.
Looking at the remaining slate of six games, three home, three road, degree of difficulty, I would say, is NYCFC, that trip to Yankee Stadium at the top. But, you know, like you said, these home games aren't necessarily gimmies. New England playing a lot better, Columbus as well, and San Jose, a tricky opponent. They're sandwiched in the middle of the Cincinnati and NYC trips.
San Jose is a real wild card because of their style of play. They're going to put you under pressure. They are an intense team led by Matias Almeida. They like to press all over the field, and Atlanta has to be sharp because San Jose can score goals in bunches when they create those turnovers and make you make mistakes.
Jason Longshore, of course, the fantastic analyst for Atlanta United. Again, you can see him and listen to him on the broadcast here with us. Of course, our next broadcast of Atlanta United Soccer, not for a couple of weeks after the little break here that they get, the 14th of September, Saturday night, when Atlanta hosts Columbus. And, of course, he has the call with Mike Conte, as always. Jason, thank you so much for laboring on Labor Day with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Jason.
That's Jason Longshore joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, your home for the Atlanta Falcons, who open up with Minnesota a week from yesterday. 1 o'clock kick at the Mall of America home state, of course. Minnesota, Sunday, September 8th, of course. Home opener comes your way on the 15th against Philadelphia on Sunday Night Football. Will Julio Jones have a new contract by then?
Oh, boy.
Thomas Mott is going to suggest something that sounds like heresy, but he believes it could be something that could be a bargaining ploy.
It's heresy, but it's 100% true. If we want to look at the facts, we're going to get into facts coming up next. Facts only.
Sports Radio 929 The Game, 929thegame.com. Willie P., Thomas Mott, hit for John and Hugh inside the Kia studio.
Sports Radio 929 The Game. And 92onthegame.com, live inside the Kia studios right now on a Labor Day Monday. Thomas Mott, Will Pelagic filling in for John and Hugh on the morning show.
I don't know how you stand so long.
Oh, but I've been standing the entire show.
Yeah, I don't know how you stand.
It's because these chairs in here, the backs are non-existent, so I'm like the hunchback of Notre Dame.
Man, I need to sit.
Yeah, no, you got to stand up. It keeps my energy flowing, too.
I have the longer legs than you, man. I can't deal with that.
That's true. I have my short, little, tiny legs. At 929 The Game to follow the station on Twitter, at Real Thomas Mott, at Willie P. Style to follow us as well. Quickly, coming up in hour number four, we get Chip Carey coming on the show. Of course, the Fox Sports South voice of the Atlanta Braves. That is going to be a great interview.
Looking forward to it. All right, I'm gonna sit back and let you bring this heresy
it's
to the
heresy.
Table.
It's not heresy.
This is some heresy
Kick
right here.
Kick your feet
here.
Up.
I'm ready to hear you completely besmirch.
I'm not.
The face of the Atlanta Falcons.
Not at all. Not at all. Listen, first off, this segment is brought to you by Dos Equis, the official beer of the college football playoff. I'm not going to deface anybody. What I'm going to do is tell the truth. Because it seems like in the media here in Atlanta and also nationally as well, there's a massive story that is brewing behind the scenes, particularly with the Atlanta Falcons, that no one wants to talk about. And it has to deal with Julio Jones. What have we been hearing from not only Thomas Dimitroff, from Dan Quinn, from even the owner, Mr. Arthur Blank himself, for months, Will? All we've heard is that, don't worry, we will have Julio Jones' contract done by week one. Don't worry, we're going to make him the highest paid receiver in the league. Where are we right now? What's the date? The 2nd of September. We are 6 days away from week one in the National Football League, and no deal is in sight. I have heard, can believe it or not, that they are millions of dollars apart still on this deal. People think that it's just, you know, we're close, we're going to get it done. I've heard that it's between $3 and $5 million apart right now on this deal, which tells me it's not going to be done week one. So here's what Julio Jones should do if Julio Jones wanted to look after Julio Jones. I'll preface this by saying we're blessed in Atlanta because Julio Jones is easily the most non-diva wide receiver in the entire league. Odell Beckham, huge diva. Antonio Brown, massive diva. You look at other wide receivers in the game as well, especially in the past, Terrell Owens, massive diva as well. Julio Jones is none of that. But if you are Julio Jones and you want to do what's best for you, you should sit out week one.
This is stupid.
No, it's not.
It's completely
think about
stupid.
This. Julio Jones right now is going to make, what, $14.25 million this
I
year,
do
Will.
Not. I do not endorse this.
And yet he is the best receiver in the National Football League. He deserves at least $20 million a year. That's what they've said that they're going to try and sign him for. The problem that Julio Jones has right now is an organization that promises one thing and has not been able to deliver on that promise. And so if you wanted to make sure that you defend what you have been fighting for, which is to be the highest paid receiver in the league, you should sit out week one. I'm not saying he's going to do it, but what happens, Will, is if he does a nice little slant route for 8 yards and pops his ACL, and he's done for the season. And at his age, at 30, maybe it's an Achilles, maybe it's an ACL. Can he come back from that? The answer is probably not. If he gets injured while playing on his current contract before he signs this new deal that he's been promised for months and he gets injured, he's forfeiting $40-plus million a year. I'm not saying he's going to. I'm not saying that it would be the right move for the organization for him to sit out. But if Julio Jones wants to take care of himself and call out the Falcon organization for publicly saying that they were going to re-sign him, give him the biggest wide receiver contract in history, and do it all before week one, and yet here we are 6 days away, he should sit out and force them to do it and force their hand.
You can't get this deal done by sacrificing another need. And again, you have to think about the fact that they had to bring in Matt Bryant with a one-year, $3 million base deal. The salary cap is up 188.2 right now, according to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. You have about $4 million in cap space. Falcons basically would need to renegotiate one or more deals to get the Julio Jones deal done. Is it worth upsetting one or more players in order to get this deal done? I don't think so.
But the question is, though, and the reason we have to have this conversation is not because of Julio Jones. It's because the organization decided to publicly state they were going to do it before week one. If they had just kept quiet and whenever the media asked, hey, when's the Julio deal going to get done? They went, well, we're working on it. We're trying. But they've publicly said they'll have it by week one. They publicly said they will guarantee it'll be done by week one. And they've also publicly said he'll be the highest paid receiver in the league, which then chains them to at least $20 million a year. They have brought it upon themselves right now, and we're at a situation where, yes, it could get done tomorrow, sure. But it's looking like, from what I've heard, we're not close.
What did I tell you earlier when we were talking about this with regards to both Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon? You cannot have deals that hamstring your ability to make additions. And that part of it is the reason. And again, I understand that they walked themselves into this problem. I will totally concede that point. But I also can concede the fact that the situation has changed. They needed to fill a need that they didn't feel like or foresee that they needed to fill. And again, that's on them. That's totally on them. But I also think that Julio Jones has made himself a reputation as being a team-first guy, a guy who doesn't ruffle feathers, and a guy who doesn't necessarily provide drama where there isn't any. And again, the part of this that I don't think can be overstated is that Julio Jones really cares about his rep in this city.
Oh, I know he does.
And if you go out and do that, you literally tarnish everything with regards to that rep.
I don't know if you do, though. And listen, you can always call in 404-741-0929. I think the fans would back Julio Jones if he simply came out on Twitter and said, listen, I was promised a deal by week one. The deal is not there. I'm concerned about my health. I'm concerned about losing out on a ton of money. I'm going to wait until the deal gets finished.
You'd be surprised how many people back the organization in this matter because of the fact that, again, it's not a quarterback, though.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not a quarterback. That's the problem. And again, I know that there's a lot of chat about the fact that this quarterback is a very, very, I would say, he's a volatile figure for a lot of people. A lot of people feel very volatile about Matt Ryan.
It's a soft subject.
It's a very hard one. It's a very hard subject for all people to deal with when it comes to Matt Ryan because he's not what has been here in the past, and we can go ad nauseum in 12 rounds about that. That's not the issue. The issue is Julio Jones, while he is, again, a big, big part of their success, he's not the quarterback.
I have said on my show, Ready or Mott, many times that I would not give Julio Jones 5 years at $20 million a year. I think Julio Jones has...
It's hard to do.
It's hard to do because Julio Jones is 30. He has probably 3 years of elite football left. And if you're paying him $20 million when he's 34 and 35 to catch 7 touchdowns and 800 yards receiving, you are way overpaying and completely handcuffing yourself.
And so many teams now in the National Football League, they don't give out those type of deals anymore. They don't give out deals for past performance. All the deals now are on the future. And again, because of that, you wonder, again, what is the true value of that deal? It's not to say that he's... And the other thing, too, the difference between him and Zeke and Melvin, it's not like he's not getting a bad deal now.
No, it's true. It's a lot of money.
He just renegotiated a deal a year ago.
Listen, I'm not saying that the deal's not going to get done, but the things that we've heard is that they are far apart, which means it might not be done by week one. Before we go to the phone lines, I want to quickly make this point. If I could decide what I would pay Julio, it'd be 3 years at $20 million. I think 3 years at 20 is fair for both sides. That way you're not handcuffed, and that way Julio is the highest paid receiver in the league. At the same time, because we've waited this long, and Julio's going to be the last receiver to get a deal done, if you would have done it before Michael Thomas, you could have saved a lot of money.
Texter from the 404 on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line says, Julio is under contract and to make $14 million. Falcons are trying to win a Super Bowl. Wide receivers don't win Super Bowls. If Julio sits game one, I hope they trade him. Another one says the deal will get done. Thomas Dimitroff usually keeps his word.
Let's quickly go out to the phone lines. Tony in Duluth, he says he has Julio's back. Tony, do you agree with me?
Yeah, no, I'm with Julio. I got to say it. I mean, as somebody who used to play football but not at a professional level, anything can happen at any time.
Anything.
You go down, that organization's not going to, you know, care about you. So I got to say I'm with Julio. I'm a diehard Falcon fan, but if you go down, you got to look out for yourself sometimes. So I just wanted to say that.
Hey, listen, Tony, I appreciate the phone call. I'm not saying that we should give Julio Jones the money. I'm saying if Julio Jones is looking after himself, which he, you know, should in the NFL, he should be literally sitting out week one. That way he guarantees the contract that is still not here.
404-741-0929 is the phone number, as well as the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. I think Jared at Norcross kind of sits more on my side. Jared, you're on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. How are you, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's going on?
So, I love Julio. He's always been my favorite wide receiver ever since he came in the game. But if he decides to not play first game, I think that he's putting himself before the team. We have bigger picture this year. We need to go to the Super Bowl and win. That's our main goal. So, I expect Thomas to pay, and we're going to get to winning that Super Bowl.
Mike in Atlanta on the text line says, we are backing Julio. They gave their word. I have faith. I have faith.
We're close, though. 6 days. 6 days away for that word to be followed up on.
The SEC had a rough weekend. I believe the mystique of the SEC is dead. We'll reopen that discussion and our poll question of the day. Do you believe the SEC is dead? At 92.9 The Game on Twitter, Willie P and Thomas Mott back here with you on the morning show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.